From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of February, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Ben Brown, agricultural economist from Missouri University Extension, will be with us to discuss soybean crush, domestic demand, and the potential. That's right, the potential for quick ships in August, if you can get soybeans delivered. It's early to talk about that, but he wants to take it up. And we'll also take a look at the agricultural energies today as it's related to the weather with Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing. It may very well be that the peaker plants in our part of the world are being used to help send electricity to those places in the really cold areas of the Midwest, from North Dakota all the way to Texas. And that's part of the natural gas logistics issue. Oh, and we'll talk about the weather, too. Don Day will be here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and we'll do it all right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Corn futures in Chicago finished the March at 5.52 and a quarter today, and that was up 13 and a half cents. The May at 5.49 and three quarters, 13 and a quarter higher. New crop December 9 higher at $4.57 and three quarters. Soybeans March contract for the day, 13.84 and three quarters, up 12 and three quarters. May at 13.85 and three quarters, 14 and a half higher. And November beans, $11.85 and three quarters, up 12 and three quarters of a cent. Bean meal futures, up $1.20 at $4.28.40, and the bean oil at $42.27, $1.23 higher for the day. Wheat futures soft red up 20 and three quarters of a cent at $6.57.5, and the hard red at $6.37.5, 20 and three quarters of a cent higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago, $1 and a nickel lower in the lead, but the April up 62.5. Feeder cattle were 7.5 cents lower, and lean hogs were down 97.5 cents. Crude oil for the day up 65 cents, and natural gas is up 21 and 7-tenths of a cent. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana now joins us. Hi, Wayne. How are you today?
Hey, well, you know, pretty good. Stayed in yesterday with the snow blowing and everything around the way in the highway emergency, but with the markets reopening today, why, we got out, but there's a lot of snow blowing around. You don't want to be on the side roads too bad.
Hey, you know, most people know who Dan Zwicker is because we talked to him for years on Thursdays, and he texted me from Waco, Texas, with something about solar energy and the windmills being shut down. I didn't understand it all, but he's kind of in the middle of that Texas cold area. Have you talked to him?
I talked to him this morning, and while we were talking, because the solar panels with the freezing rain, aren't really producing much that way, and the windmills are froze up and not working in a great area down there. His electricity, they told him they'd be having rolling blackouts for a half hour every 4 hours or so that way. So we started talking, and the lights went out on while he was talking to me, so the rolling blackouts were happening. And I talked to my brother in Austin yesterday, and they were scared they were going to get in some rolling blackouts, too, because they were warning them about that.
Well, this is a big problem. However, we should talk about the marketplace. Corn was up 10, and so were soybeans. What happened there?
Well, I think, you know, part of it was, you know, that we started off last night with a real surge. A lot of, if you look at the maps and the wheat belt, down way below where freeze kill could happen to the wheat crop out there, and not a real good snow cover yet that way. So that really popped that up. Then overnight with that filled some of the gaps that way. We got a thinner trade up there now this week. We got week-long holidays for South America and China both. We don't have quite the volatility from that. We do, but exports were pretty good in some stuff, and not so good in the other. We didn't expect much that way. But the NOPA crush was very good today, 184.65, and they were looking for 183.16. So, you know, those were some of the things that happened, but I think a lot of people just don't want to be short with this. You know, you look at the pictures, a lot of the ice in the river, transportation, rail cars, you know, and when you have this cold weather, livestock eats a lot more, and they don't gain any weight either.
What else is on your list that you're watching?
Well, you know, we've also got the Hague Forum Thursday and Friday, and we're not looking for, after the last WASDE report, the indication is that they might not kick up or take the exports for the U.S. Enough more to get back to where some people think they should be because of how they reported in the last report. So they think there could be a little bit of a confirmation of not quite as much oomph in the market as they would like to have from that report. But, another report come out today that said Chinese ending stocks, which is where they added for the world stocks on the WASDE report that sort of put a little damper on things. They said that they really don't have as much corn as what they've been reporting in the world numbers.
Well, I guess we'll find out more as time passed. Hey, thank you so much.
Alrighty, thank you, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Ben Brown now joins us from FAPRI and the University of Missouri Extension there. Thanks, Ben, for being with us. Ben, of course, is an agricultural economist. He's been thinking, he tells me, a little bit about soybeans and usage, both domestically and internationally. What have you been mulling over for the past few weeks?
You know, the last couple of months, certainly as we've seen the world and U.S. soybean balance sheets tighten on decreased supply here in the United States last summer. The rumors or, you know, the early fear of a short supply in Argentina and Brazil, and then certainly the demand that we've seen pop up for soybeans, both domestically and globally. So certainly been on my mind for a while. You know, when we break down this U.S. demand picture for soybeans, we saw USDA increase soybean exports in February, their February WASDE up 20 million bushels. You know, that's a strong move on USDA's part, signaling that they recognize that there has been record sales of soybeans to all countries around the globe, but especially China. And certainly, if you look at that expected soybean sales pace, we're exceeding USDA's target by about 230 million bushels, just a little over 230 million bushels. Now, we're not going to be able to ship all those because we simply just don't have, you know, we only got 120 million bushels of at least noted carryout right now. So something will have to happen with that, either cancellations and, you know, those countries then going somewhere else to buy soybeans or rolled to the next marketing year. So something will have to give on that. But then the other thing that I just want to point out is, you know, when we look at actual shipments have been on a blistering pace this year as well. Shipments as a proportion of USDA's target are sitting at 82% right now. So those are soybeans that have already left the country. Normally we'd be somewhere around 63%, 63-65% during this part of the year. Actual shipments are exceeding, and we got that report on Tuesday of this week because of the holiday on Monday. You know, actual shipments are exceeding USDA's pace by 414 million bushels. So again, I think USDA's revision up of 20 million bushels in their February WASDE was something that was needed. The problem for not the aggressive, you know, a bigger aggressive move by USDA was where do these soybeans come from when we've only got 120 million bushels of ending stocks, which is our tightest ending stocks in value in 7 years and one of our tightest stocks to use ratios on record. You start wondering, okay, how much more can we export? People ask me all the time, farmers will ask, are we out of soybeans? Have we ran out of soybeans? And my answer has become, we've ran out of $8 and $9 soybeans. We've probably ran out of $10, $11, $12 soybeans. But there's probably some $14 and $15 soybeans out there that could be sold, and price will do the rationing here. And that's going to feed into my comments here about soybean crush. USDA did not change soybean crush in their February report. I thought they might, just given the blistering pace of soybean crush that we've experienced, anywhere between 4 and 10% above year-ago levels for the first 4 months of the year. This month is expected to have another, or excuse me, January is expected to have another large soybean crush number. And when we look at where USDA sits in their 2020 and 2021 projections, it's just 1.5% above year ago levels. So certainly there is support to increase the soybean crush, but we don't have many soybeans to work with on the back end of this marketing year. So when we think about this from a practical standpoint for farmers, what could this mean? This likely means that USDA is telling us that they're expecting higher prices to ration demand, and that lowers domestic soybean crush capacity. Now, are we going to run out of soybean meal to feed animals? No. Again, price will do the rationing here, and if we need soybean meal, we'll pay for it. But what I think, and what I've said before many of times, is we're entering into this very real scenario, possibly, of domestic needs fighting against international opportunity. And we've seen this in other countries in the past. Certainly, we saw during the beginning stages of COVID, several countries, not the United States, but several countries put in place import restrictions or export restrictions, basically keeping the product domestically and incentivizing producers to keep the product domestically. Now, we didn't see that here in the United States. Certainly prices have risen, and it's more of a concern if you're an importing dependent country and finding that product. Here in the United States, we're blessed that we have product, and we're an export country, meaning we export a good chunk of our commodity. But when we look at soybean meal, this is something that could be very interesting because we depend on soybean meal for animal feed. And if we start getting too tight on animal feed, we could see the United States start to consider ways to keep soybean meal domestically. And again, this is one of those things where we haven't done it for a very long time. But if we get to a point where we need the meal to feed animals, that could be a possibility. USDA does signal, at least by not raising that soybean crush, that they're expecting soybean crush values towards the back half of the year to fall off. Now, when you look at the crush margin, there's two types of a soybean crush margin. There's the current margin on the board, which is effectively a replacement value. What does it cost us to replace the soybeans that we are crushing today? And that is negative, meaning that processors for soybean crush facilities are losing money by replacing the soybeans that they're crushing. But that does not accurately reflect what's actually happening at the elevator. Due to increasing soybean oil prices and then the strong soybean meal prices we've seen, it does signal that soybean crush capacity will continue to reach limits, that we will continue to push our limits on soybean crushing capacity because there's the economic incentive and the soybean meal demand there for livestock and export potentially as well. So when we look at this, I think we've got a very interesting scenario and a very tight picture on the soybean side where international forces are working for us and domestic forces are working for the soybean producers. It starts you to wonder if looking at early season soybeans come this summer would actually pay out and for producers that want to go that route. Basis prices could be pulling grain in during that time, and certainly soybean crush facilities needing that grain to make soybean meal. So just something to think about on an application standpoint when we look at this soybean picture.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Ben Brown. He's with the University of Missouri, serves as an extension agricultural economist with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Let's check now the agricultural energy sector with Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dave. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd, and thanks for having me on a pretty cold day here in Central Illinois.
Hey, we heard from Ben Brown just a moment ago in this program, and prior to the time that he and I started recording, we were talking a little bit about some email that both of us had gotten. He, as a customer in the Missouri area, had gotten an email from the co-op, which had gotten an email from the grid operator saying everybody needs to conserve electricity. The grid operator ran, I think, from South Dakota to Texas. Or we're going to have to institute the kind of rolling brown blackouts on electricity in the next day and a half if you don't. And I got a news release from Ameren, Illinois, here saying, you know what, customers in the area need to conserve natural gas. And of course, that's not electricity, but natural gas is used in homes to heat. And they suggested ways we could do that. But you and I both know that it's used to help develop electricity for the grid in certain circumstances. For instance, as we were talking, I think, just before you and I began to record, there are a couple of those natural gas fires, fired up electrical generators that people see, maybe not recognize, that only go into place from time to time. There's one across from the Incombrasa farm on Route 10 between Clinton and Champaign. There are a couple of others around locally too, but they're just there for what? The times when we really need it. Do you think the two things are related? Because electricity could be developed here and then shipped. It's kind of like having natural gas out of place. The stocks are in the wrong spot. And in this case, you just ship the electricity the other direction. Is that, you think, maybe some of this cold's causing that to happen?
Yeah, Todd. I mean, I think you're hitting it right on the nose here. I mean, normally when we're talking about a weather market, we tend to talk about ags, at least in the space of what we normally discuss. But so very much that way for energy here the last, you know, couple of days, if not couple of weeks here. You know, Dallas, I think, set a record at -3 overnight. That was their third coldest on record. Lincoln, Nebraska, -31. That was their second coldest on record. It was -21 in Topeka. We had 24 inches of snow at Midway. So all this has gotten a big logistical issue. We've had a few of the natural gas pipelines declare force majeure and shut down here, at least temporarily. A lot of this has hit the Texas and Oklahoma area, where a lot of our power and a lot of our oil and gas is generated. So if you look at where we're at right now, you've got, you know, you mentioned blackouts. There were more than 5 million people affected by rolling blackouts here in the last 24 hours. We've got more than 2 million barrels of oil production offline. That's about 18, almost 20% of our overall deal. Probably got something on the order of about 10 billion cubic feet of nat gas production that's offline here at the moment. So this all has the effect of kind of just what you talked about. You get a situation here where all of a sudden you have these on-demand natural gas facilities designed to generate electricity. They're only used maybe 3 or 4 or 5, you know, 10 days a year. But when they come on, it's certainly, like I said, it's a balancing issue of trying to not only balance where the natural gas is in the pipeline and who needs it, as well as the electricity and where it's going to go. So it's a big logistical exercise here, and it's challenged by some of these shutdowns.
Yeah. So I should be clear that I, particularly me, I'm making a leap of faith of what really is happening here, and I haven't checked to see whether that's the case. But it is a good exercise in arbitrage, relatively speaking, which happens in the agricultural world all the time. I need grain here, but it's produced there. What's the cost to get it from one place to the other, and how much of a need and demand is there? So let's talk about actual supply and demand for agricultural energy, ethanol and such, and just the energy sector. It looks like the price of gasoline should go up just because so much of Texas is shut down at this time, meaning generation in the refineries there. Will that have an impact on ethanol and ethanol plants, do you think?
Well, it certainly will. I mean, they're going to face their own logistical challenges as well. I mean, the majority being located in the Midwest, where the weather is the worst. You know, Texas, we have had several refineries shut down here. I think Texas is home to 31 refineries. We've got at least 4 or 5 of those down, including one of the biggest in the country here. Now, these are temporary issues. By the end of the week, we would expect things to start balancing back out the other way. If you look at ethanol prices in general here, Todd, they've rallied, I don't know, we'll call it, I don't know, 15 cents here in the last 3 days. We've backed off here just a little bit from this morning from where we opened. But, you know, that's a very, you know, it's a situation where on paper anyway, you could almost get your margins back to a calculated break even. We haven't had break even margins, at least on paper, really since last fall. But I think that's kind of a temporary and a fleeting issue. U.S. gasoline demand continues to be very challenged. We're running 10, 11% below where we were a year ago. Corn grind for ethanol is down around 8% year over year. So certainly we have our challenges going forward. And I think the bigger issue is, you know, betting on the economic recovery and when this gasoline demand comes back. If you look at our demand overall, unleaded demand, you know, the last 4 week average, we're down 11% year over year. Distillate demand is up 2%. So the diesel fuel demand has come back, but we haven't seen the miles driven by the average working Joe here return to the marketplace, and certainly the cold here is going to keep some people at home. So it's kind of a good news, bad news scenario, if you will.
Hey, thanks so much, Dave.
Thanks, Todd.
Dave Chatterton is with Strategic Farm Marketing from Strategic Illinois. One other note, I couldn't come up with the correct name for the localized power plants that are operated off natural gas. Those are called peaker plants. We're now joined by Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to discuss the bitter cold, the snow that has enveloped a large part of the United States. What are the temperatures like where you are in Cheyenne, Wyoming?
Well, we're on the western edge of the Arctic air mass and actually starting to see some warmer temperatures along the east slopes of the Rockies. So temperatures are actually in the 20s and low 30s above zero. But certainly the sub-zero temperatures occurred in this part of the country over the weekend. And that's what has expanded to the east and south.
Will we see some of that warmer weather come our way? And more importantly, will North Dakota all the way to Texas see some of it as well?
Yes, but it's going to be a slow process. The depth and the scope of this Arctic air mass is such that it's covering such a large part of the North American continent. And it's very deep. It's very thick. It's several thousand feet thick from the ground up. And the physical properties of Arctic air is that when it's this cold, the Arctic air is dense. It's kind of like molasses. It can't move really quick. And what we will see is a slow improvement over the next several days that will go from the west to the east. It'll start in the western high plains and gradually work its way in through the plain states and the Corn Belt by later this week and into the weekend. But we need to keep our expectations in check, because even with a more westerly, more mild Pacific air mass coming in, it's not going to really be all that warm. So yes, temperatures will moderate, but on the whole, we'll still stay below average.
Here in my part of the world, we were a recipient of a lot of snowfall, even in Champaign County, Illinois, over the last 24 hours. Is there more snow that will come with these systems?
I think we've seen the heaviest snow, but we do see some opportunities for more snow chances going forward. With the air mass getting a little warmer and the Pacific starting to push systems back across the United States, we do see over the next 7 to 10 days, more episodes of winter weather in the Midwest and Corn Belt. We've obviously had more winter in the last week than we had all in December and January, and we're just going to add to that here for another week or two.
Does the last week of February get any better?
Doesn't look like it at this point in time. While I don't see, at least over the next 2 weeks, a repeat of what we just went through, we certainly have a lot of cold air left up in those higher latitudes, a lot of it. And that's going to keep the pattern active. So the opportunity for being colder than average, getting more opportunities for snow the last 2 weeks of February into early March looks to be pretty good right now, especially for the central United States. So there's more to come. Let's just hope it's not as cold as what we just had to go through.
Indeed. Hey, thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.